Raise your hand if you, like me, wear glasses. But I promise you, my specs are dumb glasses. I'm not secretly recording the world around me like I could if I was wearing smart glasses. You know the ones I'm talking about. They can record video and audio. They can take pictures. And they can do it without you having to grab your phone from your pocket and obviously signpost to the people around you that, hey, you're being recorded. Smart glass technology has been around for well over a decade, but this time the tech has had an AI injection and can not only snap pictures of what's around you, but synthesize what you're looking at and explain it back to you. And it's not just the technical capacity that's advancing. Older models just used to look pretty uncool, but companies like Meta are really trying to make fetch happen. They've announced a star-studded smart glass collaboration with Kylie Jenner. So is this the year we turn a corner? Are these once goofy glasses becoming cool? If they're being spruiked by a Kardashian, is your teenager about to add smart glasses to their Christmas wish list? Tell me, would you buy them for your kids? Would you try a pair out yourself? Are you seeing smart glasses in the wild? Do you have some? Here with me to take a closer look through the panes of our smart glasses are Alice Clark, a freelance tech journalist, and Ben Lyle, a digital sociologist and lecturer in digital communication at RMIT. Alice, Ben, welcome to Life Matters.
Thanks for having me.
Hello. Good to be with you.
It's great to have you with me. Alice, take me back when we first started talking about smart glasses.
So I remember back in those hazy days of 2013 when Google tried to make Google Glass happen, and there were these chunky head-mounted kind of displays that could take photos and give you a bit of information, and then everyone started calling the people wearing them glass holes. They were really expensive, and then they never had a full commercial release.
Oh, so they didn't even – I remember so much hype around them. I don't think I realized they didn't actually ever make any money.
Yeah, no, they were kind of, they were a concept, they had like a limited dev release, but they never made it to the full market because they were ugly, they looked stupid, and they cost too much money.
Well, in contrast, now we have this latest wave of smart glasses, not just from Google, Meta, Apple, and Snap have all got glasses. And as I said before, we've got Kylie Jenner promoting Meta's glasses. What is different about the modern ones?
They're a lot more streamlined. They look like just a regular pair of Ray-Bans, but they have hidden cameras in them. Yay! They've also got little speakers and microphones, so you can talk to your AI assistant and they can talk back to you. You can listen to music. You can live stream everything you're seeing to the internet without anyone knowing that you're doing that, which... cool.
I mean, Alice, it sounds like from your tone of voice, and I know in my own head I'm like, cynicism alert. But okay, let's take a kind of kinder view. Ben, you've been researching smart glasses in Australia. What do people tell you about how they're actually using this tech?
Yeah, so I mean, I should preface by saying our research is a couple of years old. But yeah, with colleagues Sean Koppel and Fareed Kaviani, we looked into this. And our survey found that people are enthusiastic to some extent, but there's a little bit of a divide on those who own the technology and those who don't, as you might expect. There are questions that people have, obviously, about safety and about trust, given all of those recording features that Alice just pointed to. So there's a little bit of a divide there. But the thing I think that we found most interesting is that there's a stronger association between people who do own the tech and see it kind of as part of their identity, either as a very fashion-forward or tech-forward kind of person. They sort of potentially see that as more important to them than it is the comfort or the safety of those around them with all of those features that we mentioned. So that little point of tension, I think, is most interesting for us.
Alice, what kind of promises have been put around them beyond maybe surveilling everyone you come across?
They actually promise some pretty good stuff as long as you don't think about it too hard. So you can take photos and videos without having to get out of the moment. So like I have a two-year-old. I would be able to take photos and videos of her to capture the moment without having to get out my phone and put my phone between her and me and remove myself from that beautiful memory that I'd want to capture. You can also, I had a demo of a pair of Razer glasses. So Razer's a gaming brand. These are concept glasses earlier in the year where you could look at some ingredients and the voice would tell you what you could make with them. I do think if you can't recognize a carrot, maybe you shouldn't be in a kitchen, but that's a different issue. And you could look at a coworker and the agent would tell you their name and a recent achievement so you could start a conversation. And as somebody who is terrible with both names and faces, I love the idea of that. Like, I think there's a lot of really cool things you could do with that. And also as a accessibility device, it could be really cool for people with vision impairments or cognitive decline. The problem is that if you attach facial recognition to technology that's connected to the internet that is on everyone's face, how can that be misused by a company famous for, let's say, thinking of Meta, for example, famous for not really caring about other people's privacy and profiling users even if they are not on the platform?
Yeah, it feels like there are a couple of question marks hovering above that. On the text line, Kim says, to your point, Alice, smart glasses are very scary, but I would love a pair to take images for those situations where you can't get the same image with your camera or phone as you're seeing with your eyes. For example, when my dog is on my chest looking very cute and I can't get my phone to see what I see. Can relate, Kim. So Ben, it feels like it's a young people technology. Is that a fair characterization?
In some ways, I think maybe. Although I think we have this perception publicly, maybe, that young people are always at the vanguard of technology and that it's a very, you know, quote unquote, digital natives assessment of young people. And I know you mentioned in the preamble to our chat here whether these devices would be on the Christmas wish list. But I really do think that they are quite price prohibitive still. You know, even as they do become a little bit cheaper, we're still talking about multiple hundreds of dollars for any of these devices. And that's, you know, no small amount of change there for either young people themselves who might have disposable income or for parents and families. But I think the other thing about that is it's also in competition with a bunch of other things at a similar price point, not even in the same sort of sector. You know, it starts to compete with video game consoles or smartphones or other smart wearable technologies. And I don't know that it's, you know, got enough juice or enough interesting use cases at the moment to really overcome those competing devices that young people might be interested in.
Why do tech companies keep making them if the market keeps rejecting them?
Well, I mean, a cynical answer, I think, and one that certainly bears out from things that we've already discussed here, is around the data collection piece. You know, obviously, collecting the audio and visual and biometric data that comes with these devices is very, very valuable for these multinational tech companies, particularly as they continue to pursue AI developments. So that's certainly a number one thing for them. But I also suppose that there might, you know, be some hope that they can kind of crack the market and be the one, you know, device that becomes synonymous with the product category. And maybe they're still pushing on that, you know, frontier a little bit.
So Alice, you have seen people using these in the wild at a tech conference recently. Talk to me about what you saw.
So I was at an event in China a couple of months ago, and it was really interesting. It was this like an NDA event, which I'm still not allowed to talk about. But all of the journalists who had come from Japan and Korea were wearing smart glasses and recording the whole thing. And what really surprised me is that it took me maybe 2 days to notice that they were wearing smart glasses and that their glasses were out of the ordinary because they were brands I didn't recognize. And another day to realize that they were recording, but they had disabled the LED lights and the sounds that they're supposed to make.
So for the uninitiated, if you haven't seen these in the wild, they're meant to have a little red, basically recording light on them if they're recording so that you can see, but it's not that hard to disable those.
Yeah, it's super easy. It used to be, when like Meta's glasses or Facebook's glasses back then were first introduced in 2021, the red light was hardwired in so it couldn't be recording unless the light was on. That seems to have changed in the newer generations, judging by a quick Google on how to do it. Super easy. And I found it, when I was on this trip, I found it really interesting the different attitudes the different cultures of journalists had towards these glasses. The English and the Australians were, oh, I feel a bit uncomfortable with that. And everyone else is like, why? This is so normal. This is the way of the future.
Well, I mean, in the text line here, someone says surveillance to capitalism is already at extreme levels. Most users are completely naive. Like, are we wringing our hands over the wrong thing? There's already cameras on every street corner anyway.
Yeah, I think, sure, the whole world is on fire and everything is bad when it comes to privacy and surveillance. But we can't really control kind of what the state is doing in a lot of ways. But we can, like, these kinds of glasses, much like generative AI, don't have to be inevitable unless we let them be inevitable and unless we buy them and welcome them. We can push back more easily against consumer products than we can perhaps against state surveillance, which is also bad, but is in a different category.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor, and Alice Clark says the whole world is on fire and everything is bad. So that's a great start to your Tuesday morning.
Oh, that's my tagline.
I'm speaking to Alice Clark and Ben Lyle about smart glasses, the fact that they're sort of maybe on the rise. They're definitely a lot less ugly than they used to be. And at least internationally, they seem to be getting traction. But it does mean that there's a chance that you could be filmed in any interaction and not really realize it at the time. I'd love to know if you've seen smart glasses in the wild, if you've used them, or if you know someone who has. My number is 0418-226-576. Jackie says people with low vision have said that smart glasses help them to recognize people they meet. One such older person told me, however, that she worries about not getting permission to film. Another says, I'm legally blind and I'm tempted to get smart glasses because of the assistance finding things and reading signs, etc. But I'm concerned about how people around me would react because of their privacy concerns. Ben, attitudes about other people wearing smart glasses, what do we know?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting one because the use case you mentioned there, I think, is so, so important. And I think that's where a strength lies for these technologies. And if there's a pathway to sort of shore up that connection, I think that would be really beneficial. So I'm imagining in the same way that someone might have, you know, an assistive animal with them to help them, guide them if they, you know, have low vision, the same sort of thing might apply here. So there's a very clear user side you know, outward communication to the public that this is a thing that they need to assist them. And then that would, I think, raise the level of comfort of people around them. But I think that's a very different use case to the kind of covert recording that we're sort of imagining that could happen for, you know, more recreational purposes. And finding out ways to sort of like split the difference on those things, I think, are really important. And it comes at the intersection of, you know, norms and social engagements and also maybe regulation. I think drones is a really good example of where regulation has started to sort of catch up a bit with the technology. And, you know, we have a single kind of landing page on the government infrastructure department for drones, for example. And that's been, I think, very good at defining a purpose for the technology. But I don't think we yet have that for these kind of smart glass tech.
Yeah. When it comes to kind of accessibility uses for the sort of smart tech, I think it's fantastic, but there does need to be a way to signal that that's what it is being used for. Mm-hmm. And while I don't like the idea of people with disabilities needing to advertise that they have a disability, it is kind of like putting a vest on an assistance dog. So you know that that dog is allowed to go into the supermarket. Kind of, it would be useful to be able to know, hey, is this person blind and using these glasses to understand the world? Or is this just another guy wearing perv glasses?
So, both of you, I suppose, when, if ever, do you think smart glasses could go mainstream?
Who can say at this point? It could be now. It could be in another 10 years. It could be never. Predicting this stuff is so hard. If I could predict it, I would be a bajillionaire. But it does look like it's going mainstream. Like, you can just go to like a regular glasses place and get your prescription re-upped and have your prescription glasses be smart glasses. The barrier to entry is a lot lower than it was.
Hmm. I think so. I think the thing that probably needs to happen in this kind of sector is for them to find a balance between like ongoing costs and an initial price point. So I was saying before, I think they still remain fairly expensive, but I think the recent backlash on the back of the latest products rolling out from Meta was that they were starting to limit some of the interactions that you could have and the types of requests you could make of the AI services at a certain point. And then you would need to pay a monthly subscription fee to add to all the other monthly subscription fees that you might be paying for streaming services and other different things. So I think finding a balance on those things that are acceptable to the public will be a really important factor in this.
Ben, Alice, thank you so much for talking to me. Alice Clark, freelance tech journalist. You can find her work on Substack. Her newsletter is called Press Any Button. And Ben Lyle, a digital sociologist and lecturer in digital communication at RMIT. And thank you for your texts. One very specific and kind of unsettling anecdote. One person says, as a doctor in an emergency department, a companion of a patient only admitted he was wearing these glasses and filming as I was about to perform a medical exam. The possibility of live streaming or worse, using this for deep faking, is horrific.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.